Well, good evening. Welcome to another session. Tonight we're going to be talking about love in the midst of failure. Jesus said that the mark of someone who follows him would be the quality of their love for one another. So how well do you love? To some degree, most of us might think that we do obey the command to love. But if we're honest, we're also aware that we could do a better job of loving. Perhaps you might have this vague sense that you're doing a fairly good job at loving, yet you know it could be better. Our love certainly doesn't match God's love for us. We're aware of that. Jesus said, "Love one another as I have loved you." Does our fairly good job of loving really count as obedience to his command? Could it be that we're too satisfied in how we're doing at love? Plus, we always think that we love better than we do. On the other hand, we're all aware that we have failures at loving. What happens in your heart when you fail at love? Did you ever fail in an area that you thought that you would never fail in? You were convinced that you were better than that. You thought that you'd never fail in those areas. And when you do fail in those areas, are you aware of love coming from your heart? Particularly toward the one that you failed? Or towards someone else, for that matter? Probably not. We're more apt to find discouragement or self-contempt in our heart than we are to find love. How do we ever find love in our heart in the midst of our failures? So how do we find love in our heart when we're the ones who failed? Well, we're going to go back on our journey with Here's Waldo. So we introduced Waldo this morning in a very complicated one. This one's a little bit easier to find him in. So can you see Waldo? Anybody got a clue where Waldo is? Remember, he's always wearing a bobble hat. He's got glasses on. He's got a red and white striped shirt. Nobody can find Waldo, huh? No, it's not a trick. Okay, look, concentrate on the left-hand side of the screen. And look about in the middle on the left-hand side, right over by the edge. Do you see him over there? Did someone say they found him? Good. Anybody else see him? I don't think this thing will point. We'll see what we can see. Oh, no, it doesn't on the screen. Someone that's found him can go point out where Waldo is. you have a pointer? There you go. Do you see him? You see that girl in the pink right about the middle? Just in a little bit. Go straight down from her and you see Waldo.
His eyes are big.
Yes. Yes. Well, Waldo's sometimes pretty hard to find amongst all the people in the illustration. But so is it hard to find love in our heart in the midst of our failures. We've been called to love, but we're also failures at love. And one of the things that keeps us from loving well is our inflated belief that we do love well. We think that we love better than we do. Well, what is love? Is it just being kind, caring? Is it giving someone what they want? No. It's good to be kind and caring and giving to others. But those things could also be violations of love. So what is this love that God is calling us to? 1 John 4:8, 4 through 11 says this. God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. Well, let's look at some important ingredients in this passage. First of all, love comes from the heart of God. He is love. And then God showed his love. Some of the translations use the word demonstrated his love. He demonstrated his love for us. He didn't just tell us he loved us and leave it at that. He showed it in action. He sent his Son to pay the penalty for our sin that we might have life. He met our greatest need. He didn't ask us what would it take to make you feel loved. In our foolishness, we might say, well, how about just a comfortable life? Or how about no hassles? Or how about a happy family? Well, he didn't ask us what it would take us to make us feel loved. He met our greatest need. And what he did is he did it at a great cost to himself, the death of his own Son. He did it so that we could have life. So if we draw from this passage just those ingredients that I highlighted, what is love that God is calling us to? And just drawing out of the passage, this is what I came up with. Love is extending your heart in total compassionate commitment to another while doing what's best for them, even at your own expense. But with that definition of love in mind, let's look at the passage where Jesus said, "This is my command, that you love one another." This is the kind of love he was talking about. How are you doing at that? Can any of us say that we love like this? yet that is what God is saying that we are to do. Isn't it impossible to love like that? We can understand how God can love like that. He's God. But we can't love like that. You can put your best efforts forward and make a determined effort to love like that, and you're going to fall short. Yet Jesus said, love one another like this. Ephesians 5:25 says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Well, most men would say that they love their wives very much. And what they're saying is true. Most men do love their wives very much. And yet, as we learn to love as Christ loved the church, we must open our eyes to seeing what we do not see and understanding what we do not understand about love. What we must understand is that love comes from God. Love comes from a personal encounter and relationship with Him. A deep sense of God's forgiveness and love produces a love within us that's supernatural. It comes from God. And then we do love. Well, what keeps us from going to God is that we're deluded into thinking that we're okay the way we are. We're doing a pretty good job. We have no reason to run to Him because we're doing all right. We're getting by. I'm going to attempt to illustrate this in the life of Peter. It's walk through some passages that all of us are very familiar with. You've probably heard many sermons on it. But I'm going to walk through it looking at what does it mean to love like Jesus is calling us to do, and then failing at that love. And what do we do after that? And how do we ever get love in our heart in the midst of our failures? So we're only going to look at a few days in Peter's life, yet there are a few very significant days that changed Peter. The command is recorded in John 13:33-38. Jesus speaking, and he says this, my children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I'm going, you cannot come. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this all men will know that you're my disciples, if you love one another. Simon Peter asked him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus replied, where I'm going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later. Peter asked, Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. Then Jesus answered, will you really lay down your life for me? I tell you the truth, before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. These are Jesus' final bottom line instructions to his disciples. He wants them to know that the true mark of followers of Jesus is the quality of their love for one another. This is vital for each one of us. A true mark of our relationship with Jesus is the quality of our love. Yet, we often think that we love better than we do. This was certainly true of Peter. It sounds as though Peter was saying, Lord, I do love you. In fact, I'll lay down my life for you. I love you that much. Peter thought that he knew how to love. But the answer that Jesus gave exposed to Peter that he didn't love as much as he thought he did. Essentially, Jesus was saying, Peter, you don't understand. You think that you already love like I'm calling you to love, but you're deceived. Your belief that you love better than you do actually is getting in the way of you loving. In John 13:38, Jesus challenges Peter and exposes his coming failure. But let's not be so quick to judge Peter. He's the brashly bold one. Is this just a Peter syndrome? Matthew 26:35 says, but Peter declared, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. Listen to these next words. And all the other disciples said the same. Mark 14:31, we read, but Peter insisted emphatically, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And all the others said the same. This wasn't just Peter. This was all of the disciples. The point is, none of us love as well as we think we do. And having our failures exposed to us is a necessary part of learning to love. See, it was only a few hours after Jesus gave this command that Peter failed in the very area that he boldly told Jesus that he could count on him. He would never deny him. In fact, he loved him so much that he would lay down his life for him. Peter thought that he loved better than he did. I'm going to read how it's recorded in Luke 22:54-62. Then seizing him, they led him away and took him into the house of the high priest. Peter followed at a distance. But when they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter sat down with them. A servant girl saw him seated there in the firelight. She looked closely at him and said, this man was with him. But he denied it. Woman, I don't know him, he said. A little later, someone else saw him and said, you also are one of them. Man, I am not, Peter replied. About an hour later, another asserted, certainly this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean. Peter replied, man, I don't know what you're talking about. Just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed. The Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken to him. Before the rooster crows today, you will disown me three times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. When Peter denied the Lord the third time, the rooster crowed. The next words that Luke recorded are very penetrating. When the rooster crowed, Jesus turned and looked straight at Peter. Can you imagine the power in the look? Peter had just shortly before asserted that he knew how to love Jesus. He'd never deny him. He loved him so much that he was willing to lay down his life for him. And now, just a few hours later, he didn't even want to be associated with him. The rooster crowed, and Jesus turned and looked straight at Peter. What would that feel like? What would it feel like you failed the one that you wanted to love? the one that you told they can count on you to the point of death. And now you fail them. To remain looking at the one you failed is to realize the impact of how you have hurt deeply the one you love. I would imagine Peter's thoughts to be something like this. Oh, Jesus, I thought that I really loved you. I thought I could do it, but I'm a failure at loving the way you have taught us to love. Oh, Jesus, how this must hurt you. The text simply says that Peter went outside and wept bitterly. Like, oh God, what have I done? Let the failure impact. Like Peter, we all fail to love as Jesus intends us to love. It's in the middle of our failure, though, that we have the opportunity to learn to love. Jesus knew that we would fail, just as he knew Peter would fail. But it's in the midst of those failures that we can learn how to love like Jesus is calling us to love. Peter let the impact of that failure penetrate him. He felt the weight of what he had done. He left the one he loved to die alone, and he lied to serve himself. I believe that we must let our failures impact us in order for us to see how we can love. But we fight being impacted. We don't want the impact of our failures to be known and to be seen. And when we fight being impacted, we go in directions that further violate love. I'm going to throw out several hypothetical directions that Peter could have gone in response to the exposure of his failure to love Jesus. They're not directions he went. They're just hypothetical directions that he would have gone, could have gone, that we often go when we fail to love. And I'd like you to think about these directions and ask yourself these questions. If he goes in any of these directions, does he love? Is his care for Jesus? Is he concerned about what is best for Jesus? So first of all, the direction of self-contempt. Perhaps Peter would think something like, boy for stupid. I'm always sticking my foot in my mouth. When will I ever learn to keep my big mouth shut? I can't believe I said that. I need to be more careful. If Peter would have gone in the direction of self-contempt, where would have his focus been? Would it have been on caring for Jesus and loving him? No. It would have been on himself and how awful he felt for not having done better than he did. It's often easier to punish ourselves rather than to let the impact of our failure penetrate to our heart so that we feel the pain of the one we failed. Rather than being concerned about the pain we have caused another, we'd rather beat ourselves up for having done so poorly. So once again, where's the focus? Is it on loving? No, it's on self. And because of that, it further violates love. Or what about a direction of justification? Peter could have said, wait a minute, there's more to it than what it looks like. You're not seeing the whole picture. The reason I did that was because, again, where is the focus? Is it on loving? No. It's a further violation of love. Or how about focusing on the expectations to being too high? Blaming Jesus for asking something that's impossible. He's expecting too much. Your standards are too high. I can't be perfect. Where's the focus? Another direction that violates love. Or how about just withdraw and quit trying? What's the use? I've had it. It's just a waste of effort. And again, where's the focus? Or explaining that it really wasn't a failure to love. I was simply trying to keep things from getting out of hand and causing more problems. Another direction that violates love. Or explaining all the ways that he's done quite well. After all, didn't he give up much to follow Jesus? He should appreciate all that he's done rather than just focusing on where he's failed. Again, where's the focus? It violates love. Or excusing by focusing on his humanness. I'm doing the best I can. Can't you be satisfied with anything less than perfection? I'm only human. I'm not God like you. We're pretty prone to go in any one of these and several other directions, aren't we? In the midst of our failures, we often go in directions that further violate love. So let's observe Peter in a situation just a few days after his failure to love was exposed. It's recorded in John 21. It says, it happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, called Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them, and they said, we'll go with you. So they went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. So picture the timing of this. This is just a few days after Jesus said, my children, I'll be with you only a little longer. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men are going to know that you're my disciples, if you have this kind of love for one another. Jesus had just given them the most significant instruction that he wanted them to remember and obey. Love one another. As I have loved you. So ponder with me for a moment. Why are they going fishing now? They knew how to fish. They were fishermen. But why now? Remember that Jesus had already appeared to them twice after the resurrection. They knew that Jesus had risen from the dead. Why go fishing now? How confident do you suppose they felt about doing what Jesus asked them to do? Love one another as I've loved you. Were they ready at this point to eagerly throw themselves into the task of loving others? Or were they perhaps so aware that they weren't as good at love as they thought they were? So now, they were returning to something they felt a little bit more confident at. Fishing. They were fishermen, and they knew how to fish. So what do you turn to when you fail? This is not very unlike us. Have you noticed that when we are disturbed and upset in relationship with someone that we want to be close to, we have a tendency to get busy. It's when closets get cleaned, garages get cleaned out and organized. We're upset in relationship, but when we do a task that we can be successful at, at least we feel a little bit better because we got the garage cleaned. We still may be upset, but we don't feel quite so badly because at least we accomplished something. In the case of the disciples, they went fishing. They probably weren't so sure that they knew how to love like Jesus said to love, but they knew how to fish. And that night, they caught nothing. Now how do you suppose they felt? Their confidence level at loving was not too high. So they turned to something that perhaps they felt a little bit more confident at, fishing. And they caught nothing. So I'm going to pick up the passage in verse 4. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. He said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Now let's pause here just a little bit. The text says that they didn't know it was Jesus. Someone on shore that they didn't recognize said, "Throw your net on the other side and you'll find some." Can you imagine telling a fisherman what to do to catch fish after they fished all night? There must have been something in the way Jesus spoke to them. It certainly wasn't condemning. And they did what he said. I would have liked to have heard how Jesus said that. Nevertheless, they did it. And their net was full of a large number of fish, 153 of them. So at this point, John recognized that it's Jesus. And he said to Peter, "It's the Lord." Peter jumped out of the boat and made a beeline right to Jesus. Now keep in mind, Peter is running toward Jesus. Why is he running toward the one that he failed? I think that Peter realized fully that Jesus had life that he wanted. Jesus is the source of life. And relationship with him is what real life is about. Yet he must have been keenly aware that he could not confidently run up to him as someone that Jesus could count on when life got tough. I'm sure he was very aware of his failure to love the one that he wanted to love so well. What would it feel like to run up to the one that you have just failed? Rather awkward? You want to be there? And you want to love them, yet you're very aware that you have failed them and you have hurt them. Let me pick up in verse 7. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire burning coals there with fish on it, and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have just caught." Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. So do you catch the awkwardness of that moment? None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. These are the ones who said with confidence, we love you, Jesus, and we will lay down our life for you. At this point, the text gets even more uncomfortable. After they had finished eating, Jesus turned to Peter, the one who boldly stepped forward to assert his commitment to love. And Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? What do you suppose was going on inside of Peter at this point? He really wanted to love. A few days ago, he was even convinced that he would be willing to lay down his life for Jesus. But Peter abandoned Jesus during Jesus' most difficult time. And Peter lied to protect himself. Now he's standing before Jesus. I'm sure he was keenly aware of his failure to love. He also had a desire to love. And he knew that Jesus had something that he wanted. So we pick up in verse 15. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. When Jesus asked Peter the third time, do you love me? Peter was hurt. Was Peter aware that he really couldn't love like Jesus was asking him to? In which case, Jesus' pointed questions were probably making him quite uncomfortable and very aware of his failure to really love. Or was Peter convinced that he already did love as Jesus was asking him to, and he was upset because Jesus didn't believe him? In this case, Peter might have been thinking that he understood and loved, but not realizing the full extent of what Jesus was saying. Either way, this was a very disturbing time for Peter. And in the uncomfortableness, Jesus was making an important point. Love for Jesus means being involved in feeding his sheep. And that involves loving with a love that can only come from our relationship with God. So following Jesus means being involved in loving others. Peter thought that he loved enough to lay down his life for Jesus, but when things got really uncomfortable, he even denied that he knew Jesus. And Jesus was bringing Peter back to this uncomfortable point. If you want to be my disciples, it will be evident in the way that you love others. Jesus was in the process of teaching Peter how to love. It means being involved in the business of kingdom living. It means feeding sheep. It means reaching out to others and loving them as Jesus loved us. It also means recognizing that I'm a failure at loving. I don't love as well as I think I do. It means refusing to turn in directions that further violate love. It means running toward Jesus, knowing that I can't do it, but also knowing that God is love and he loves me. And God is the source of love. Jesus went on to let Peter know that eventually he would be laying his life down for God. There's a cost to loving, and it makes it all the more difficult when we look at someone else and think that they don't have it quite as tough as we do. This happened for Peter. After Jesus informed Peter about the death that Peter would die, he saw Jesus and John together, and Peter asked, says, when Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. You must follow me. We must follow God on whatever path he takes us. There is a cost. There is a cost to loving, yet love is the most valuable thing that we can have. You must follow me. Our best intentions and our greatest commitment to love will fall short until we learn what it means to follow Jesus. In John chapter 15, verse 5, Jesus said that unless we remain connected to him, we cannot love like he's asking us to love. He said, apart from me, you can do nothing. Not even love. He said, we must remain in his love and be connected to him as the source of life. Love comes from a personal encounter and relationship with God. Jesus is our example. And he also loved through his relationship with the Father. In Ephesians 5, it says, be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children, and live a life of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. Jesus always sought to do the will of the Father. He entrusted himself to God. And here it says, he gave himself up as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. The result was that the love of God flowed through him to benefit us, even at his own expense. Love comes from receiving from God. After observing a few days in the life of Peter and how he loved and failed to love, how he thought he could love so much better than he did, I became real curious as to what would Peter write about when he wrote his epistles. So I started reading in 1 Peter, and this is the first thing I came across. For you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your forefathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. Do you catch the preciousness of Jesus? He says it's way beyond silver and gold. It's through the blood of Jesus that we were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to us from our forefathers. And then he goes on and he says, through him you believe in God who raised him from the dead and glorified him. And so your faith and hope are in God. Verse 22. Now that you have purified yourselves by obeying the truth, so that you have sincere love for your brothers, love one another deeply from the heart. And it was real interesting to me to see, first he said, so that you see that you have sincere love for your brothers. He used the word phileo there. And then he said, love one another deeply from the heart, agape. Both of them in the same sentence. It's like saying, I know that you care very much about each other, one another. Now let it go deeper. Now learn what it means to love the way Christ loves us. Love is extending your heart in total compassionate commitment to another while doing what's best for them, even at your own expense. Do you want to learn how to love? It means walking with God, It means learning to trust him. It means being able to look courageously and honest at how you currently love. And it means running to Jesus when you have failed to love. I can't love like this apart from God. It's impossible. But when I come to God, his love flows through me. Well, how does this happen? I'd like to recall a passage in Luke where Simon, a Pharisee, excuse me, Simon, a Pharisee, invited Jesus to have dinner with him. And a woman who had lived a very sinful life in town heard that Jesus was going to be there, and so she went there too. She brought with her an alabaster jar of perfume, a very expensive perfume. And she stood beside Jesus, behind him, at his feet, weeping. The tears fell on his feet, and she began wiping his feet with that very expensive perfume. And she kissed his feet as she poured the perfume on them. And while this was going on, Simon, the Pharisee, was thinking that if Jesus really knew what kind of woman this was, she was a known sinner. If he really knew what kind of woman she was, he wouldn't be letting her do this. It says Jesus knew what Simon was thinking. And he turned to Simon and he said this, "Simon, I have something to tell you." "Tell me, teacher," he said. "Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii, the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he canceled the debts of both. Now which of them will love him more?" Simon replied, "I suppose the one who had the bigger debt canceled." "You have judged correctly," Jesus said. Jesus went on to say that this woman had been forgiven much, so she loved much. But Simon hadn't loved him nearly as much as she had. Then Jesus made a very profound statement. "He who has been forgiven much loves much. But he who has been forgiven little loves little." What is Jesus saying? Do I have to be an awful sinner in order to love well? No, I am an awful sinner. I fail at loving. I must recognize it and run to Jesus for forgiveness and love. The Pharisee couldn't see his sin. It's not that he had less sin. His sin was just better looking. And so many times, haven't we learned how to sin in very respectable looking ways? We fail to see our sin, and we fight the exposure. At the heart, the Pharisee's sin was just as awful as the woman's. Simon failed to love. And Jesus said, you can sum up the whole law by loving God and loving others. Any failure of that is breaking the law. And James says, if we break the law at one point, we're guilty of it all. Any sin is just as worthy of judgment as the woman's sin. So God help us. We need to receive God's forgiveness. And if we don't even recognize our sin, we never go running to God. Consequently, we don't receive from him. Therefore, we must allow God to expose our failures so that we can run to him and receive from him. Last year, when I spoke a couple sessions on forgiveness, I shared an illustration that I made up several years ago. And I'm going to share it here again in the context of this. And it's simply this. I want you to picture what it would be like to stand before God totally exposed. Everything that you've ever done wrong in your life is there. Oh, and it's worse. Everybody in the world is standing around semicircle looking directly at you. You're on center stage. And everybody sees everything that you've ever done wrong in your life. What would that feel like? Oh, and it's worse than that. There's a whole bunch that's exposed now. And you didn't even think it was wrong. And now, for the very first time, you see how wrong it really is. And what a failure to love it is. Pretty intense exposure. Everybody's looking at you. What would you feel like doing with your eyes? Can you picture it? Do you want to look down? Hide your eyes? Find a crack to crawl into? And when we do, we can't receive. And we can't love. You could even be thinking about, well, I know that the Bible says I need to love one another. So I need to love these people that are all looking at me. Can you muster it up? Your best determined effort to love would fall short. That's not the way love comes into your heart. Instead of looking down and hiding, it would be to lift the eyes, as if to look directly into the eyes of God. So it's all true. And you must judge, because you're righteous, you're holy. I'm totally at your mercy. And I picture God smiling, and he says, yeah, it's worse than you thought it is, isn't it? That's why I sent Jesus. It's all forgiven. I paid it all. Come, my child, come. And with the smile on his face, I picture him just inviting me to run to receive that embrace. So picture running to him at that point and receiving that embrace. What would happen in your heart? What would you feel? So just speak it out. What's words that you would... Confidence. Safe. What else? There's lots of things. What would it feel like? What? Yeah. Well, where would that come from? That sounds kind of like love, doesn't it? Wouldn't you feel freedom? Gratitude? Peace? Joy? Where did it come from? You can't muster those things up by a determined effort that you're going to do it. That only gets there by receiving. I have to lift my eyes to see. And if I don't even see my need, I will never lift my eyes. So I need to lift my eyes to receive. And then what happens inside of me? There's love. How about all those people looking at you at that point? What would you feel towards them? It doesn't matter that they're looking anymore. It's all forgiven. Wouldn't you want to say, do you see what he did? He forgave it all. I want that for you too. Doesn't that sound like love? And where did it come from? It came from receiving. If we were to face exposure of that magnitude, wouldn't our first inclination be to scramble and get out of the exposure? But God sees it all, and he's paid for it all. And he says, come and receive. You're loved. back to 1 John 4:7. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. And then John goes on and explains just what we've been talking about. And you drop down to verse 16. It says, and so we know and rely on the love God has for us. Love can never come the way Jesus is asking us to love. It can never come from trying harder to love better. It only comes from receiving. And so, having our failures to love exposed is really for our benefit, so that we can run to Jesus and receive. And the same thing gets worked out in relationships between one another. What happens when I run to the one that I failed and say what I said was so wrong? Then it must have hurt you deeply. You run to them, letting the exposure impact you, and you care about them and the impact it has on them. And then love comes. It's there. And even in the midst of failure, you can experience intimacy. But we fight going there. We fight the exposure. So let's wrap it up with just a few statements. We often think that we love better than we do. And when our failures to love are exposed, we often go in directions that further violate love. Love comes from receiving from God. So if you've never received God's gift of forgiveness for sin, it starts there. But that's just the start. It also continues in our journey of life as God brings our failures to light so that we can see them. And when we see them, then we can run to God for mercy and grace. We can't receive if we think we're doing okay. The exposure is always for our benefit. It's never to condemn us. And it's when, in the light of that exposure, that we lift our eyes and receive, we do begin to love like Jesus is calling us to love. So, first of all, will you open your eyes to seeing when the exposure comes, rather than fighting the exposure? And secondly, will you lift your eyes to receive from God? That's the path to loving as Jesus called us to love. Thank you.